Welcome back to The Deep Dive, where we tear through the research so you can be instantly well-informed. Today, we are stepping right into one of the most exciting and arguably most necessary shifts in the history of pharmaceutical research.
It's a big one.
For decades, drug discovery has really relied on two main models, flat, two-dimensional cell cultures and, of course, animal models. But now, the focus is shifting. And shifting fast to human microtissues grown in a dish, what the scientific community calls human organoids.
That's right. And this is a complete game changer. When we talk about organoids, we're discussing three-dimensional structures.
Mini organs, essentially.
Exactly. Mini organs is the perfect way to think about them. They're derived from human stem cells, and crucially, they're engineered to physically and functionally recapitulate the key architectural aspects of our actual tissues. You know, a tiny piece of gut, brain, liver.
And that architecture, that 3D structure, that's the foundational difference, isn't it?
It is the absolute key advantage. They model human physiology, complexity, and that cellular diversity of real tissue far more closely than the standard 2D cell lines.
Right.
I mean, those traditional lines are cheap, they're easy to use, but they very quickly become unnatural. They undergo changes, sometimes even malignant transformation, and they just stop behaving like the tissue you're trying to study.
So if we just lay out the options, the comparison is pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
The old 2D cell lines, simple, low cost, fast, but their physiological relevance to an actual human body
is extremely low.
Yeah, next to nothing.
And then you jump to the other extreme, animal models. They give you the context of whole organism, which is great, but they carry this severe limitation of interspecies differences.
A drug that's safe in a mouse isn't always safe for us.
Or it might work perfectly in a dog and do absolutely nothing in a human. This failure to predict human outcomes is probably the single greatest bottleneck in drug development.
Which is exactly why organoids are seen as this bridge. They offer high physiological relevance, pretty good throughput for testing, and maybe most importantly, we're seeing this accelerating regulatory acceptance.
Right, with the FDA Modernization Act 2.0 and 3.0.
Exactly. Congress has provided a clear official pathway for these new approach methodologies to replace, reduce, and refine animal testing.
It's the validation the technology is really needed. So our mission today is to unpack how these complex 3D models are becoming just pivotal for assessing drug efficacy, toxicity, and opening pathways for truly personalized medicine.
And we'll also get into the major challenges that are still out there.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, so let's unpack the science of creation. I mean, these incredibly complex 3D structures don't just assemble themselves. When you look at how they're made, the source material seems to dictate everything.
It does. It dictates the complexity of the process and how long it takes. There are essentially two main starting points. The first comes from pluripotent stem cells, or PS cells. Most commonly, these are induced pluripotent stem cells, or iPS cells. This is all based on the Nobel Prize-winning work of Shinya Yamanaka back in 2006. He figured out how to reprogram adult somatic cells, like a skin cell.
Yeah, just a regular cell.
And revert it back to an embryonic pluripotent state, a blank slate.
It's still just mind-boggling that you can essentially hit a reset button on a mature cell.
Yeah.
But once you have that blank slate, how do you guide it to become, say, a tiny brain or a retina?
Well, that's the hard part. The process is it's lengthy and intensely complex. It involves weeks, sometimes months, of specific sequential instruction. You're basically mimicking the entire process of human embryonic development in a dish.
Wow.
Step by step, using these precise cocktails of growth factors until you guide that cell line to differentiate into the specific organ you want.
So this is the really labor-intensive route. Why is it necessary?
Because this approach is essential for organs that don't have active, self-renewing stem cells in adulthood. Think about the brain or heart muscle or the retina. You have to force their creation from scratch.
Okay, so contrast that with the second source, TSC-derived organoids, which use tissue stem cells.
Right. These are derived directly from primary tissue samples or biopsies. So you could take a sample from a patient's colon or their airway.
And that must be way faster.
Dramatically faster. We're talking days to weeks, not months. Because if you're starting with cells that are already committed to a tissue lineage, they already know they're a colon cell. You bypass all those extremely long specification steps. It's so much more efficient.
So you can just put them in the right environment and they go.
Exactly. A single intestinal TSC, for example, can self-organize and build those complex crypt villus structures all on its own, right there in the dish.
That speed and efficiency has to be crucial for the pharmaceutical pipeline.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Organoids truly shine when you're modeling complex human diseases, especially where animal models just fail, or where patient responses vary all over the map. This is our bridge to personalized medicine.
And the classic example here has to be cystic fibrosis. It's a genetic disorder, mutations in the CFTR gene, and we know that the response to drugs like Orkambi varies hugely among patients.
That variation is exactly what makes personalized testing with patient-derived organoids, or PDOs, so valuable. Scientists developed this really simple yet powerful tool called the CF swelling assay.
Okay, how does that work?
So if you take healthy intestinal organoids, they act like tiny water pumps. The healthy CFTR channel opens, it pushes chloride ions out, and water rushes in, making the organoids swell up really fast.
But if you take an organoid from a CF patient?
The pump's broken, it's defective, so they fail to swell. The drug test then is simple. You add the modulator drug, and if it works for that patient's specific mutation, it rescues the function, and the organoid starts to swell.
And what made this a real breakthrough was the clinical correlation, right? It wasn't just a cool trick in a lab.
Precisely. Studies showed that the drug response in this simple assay correlates incredibly well with actual clinical outcomes in the patient. Things like lung function, measured as PPFEV1. That was the first major validation of organoids for personalized medicine.
That power to model human-specific genetics must be even more important in something like, say, the central nervous system. Neurodegenerative disorders like Parkinson's are just notoriously difficult to model.
They are, and organoids are giving us insights we just couldn't see before. For Parkinson's or PD, organoids that carry specific mutations like DNAJC6 or LRRK2, they show impaired development of dopamine neurons and that pathological clumping of alpha-synuclein protein.
And the implication there goes right back to our point about animal models.
It does. It's absolutely critical to note that while the human organoid shows clear PD pathology, the equivalent DNAJ6 knockout mice, they don't replicate the phenotype at all.
So the animal model completely fails to show the disease.
Right. It's a direct, undeniable demonstration of why you need the human cellular context for this kind of complex neurobiology. We see a similar story in Alzheimer's disease.
With the APOE4 variant.
Exactly. Organoids with that strong genetic risk factor show enhanced pathology, more amyloid beta plaques, more abnormal tau. And the model lets you do co-culture studies. You can add in immune cells, like microglia, and see how they contribute to inflammation. You can't study that intricate crosstalk in a 2D dish.
Okay, beyond genetics, let's talk pathogens. Mm-hmm. The norovirus example is just shocking.
Absolutely. Human norovirus, the leading cause of acute gastroenteritis, was this huge public health mystery because we couldn't grow it. Traditional cell lines, mice, they're all completely resistant to it.
So we couldn't study it.
Couldn't study it. Intestinal organoids provided the first ever robust platform for its replication. It's how we finally learned that the virus targets enterocytes in the gut.
And then there was Zika virus. Without access to infected fetal tissue, studying how it caused birth defects was almost impossible.
Brain organoids were the key. They were absolutely essential to model the microcephaly phenotype. The organoids showed that ZIKV preferentially attacks neural progenitor cells, which messes up the formation of cortical layers. It perfectly mirrored the tragic pattern seen in human fetuses.
Let's highlight one more, a massive and recent point. The early days of COVID-19 research.
Yes. Airway and intestinal organoids were used very quickly. And the follow-up study showed that hydroxychloroquine, which had shown some initial promise in those simple 2D cell line studies,
right, everyone was talking
was about. Utterly ineffective in the more complex, physiologically accurate organoid models.
And that organoid finding perfectly aligned with what the large-scale human clinical trials later showed. That failure of the 2D model versus the predictive accuracy of the organoid. That's probably the most powerful argument for this shift.
So what does all this mean for reducing risk in the drug development pipeline? It means organoids are now crucial for what we call translational safety applications.
Because things like liver injury and cardiotoxicity are the top reasons drugs fail.
Exactly. Drug-induced liver injury, or DILI, and cardiotoxicity are the leading causes of drug attrition and market withdrawal. If we can catch those failures earlier with better models.
We save billions of dollars, and more importantly, we save lives. So how are the liver organoids, the HLOs, faring?
They're proving to be indispensable. Functionally mature HLOs can recapitulate known toxicities from drugs like troglitazone or even common painkillers like paracetamol, but with higher sensitivity than standard 2D liver cells. They're being used in high-throughput screens to predict DILI potential with much better accuracy.
And for cardiac toxicity, the data is just as compelling.
It is. They've successfully modeled doxorubicin-induced cardiotoxicity, and you can actually see the changes: reduced viability, fibrosis, and you can measure the impaired rhythmicity, the irregular beating.
I saw a key study that screened FDA-recalled compounds.
Yes, and it found that cardiac organoids detected dose-dependent ATP depletion and beat disruption more effectively than the 2D model bears. They were just better at spotting the human risk factors.
But that predictive power is great for a single organ. Where we get to the next level of complexity is inter-organ crosstalk. A drug isn't just affecting the heart in isolation.
Exactly. This is the argument for multi-organ platforms. These new systems, like liver-heart co-cultures, have shown something you'd never see otherwise. For example, the liver's metabolism can convert a drug like clomipramine into a metabolite that then drives the cardiotoxicity.
So the damage to the heart is actually caused by the liver's activity.
Precisely, an effect that was completely absent when the heart tissue was tested on its own. It's a finding you just cannot replicate without this kind of integrated system.
And we're seeing similar predictive power in other systems too.
Correct. Intestinal organoids showed something like 90% accuracy in predicting drug-induced diarrhea in one reference panel. And kidney organoids are great for modeling acute kidney injury from common nephrotoxicants like cisplatin.
But safety isn't just about toxicity, it's about how the drug behaves in the body. Are organoids helping predict ADME absorption, distribution, metabolism, and excretion?
They are, but it highlights a current technical challenge. Liver organoids are great for metabolism. They express the key CYP450 enzymes. But for absorption, say, how well a drug crosses the gut wall, you need full access to both the outside and inside of the tissue barrier.
And that sounds like a tough engineering problem for a tiny 3D ball of cells. You can't just inject a needle into it.
Right, which is why systems like apical-out organoids are being developed. Normally, the inside surface of your gut is facing inward in the organoid ball. To test permeability, you have to turn it inside out or flatten it, maybe using a 2D transwell system.
So you can get to both sides of the barrier.
Exactly. That gives researchers direct access so they can measure things like tear or transepithelial electrical resistance, a key measure of how intact that barrier is.
Okay, so although they are incredibly powerful, we need to acknowledge they are still reductionist models. There are significant hurdles.
Oh, for sure. They're not perfect. If we can grow a mini gut, what's still missing that stops it from acting like a real organ?
That's the question.
Well, primarily the lack of complete supportive tissue systems. First, they usually lack vascularization, blood flow. This limits nutrient delivery, and it really complicates accurate drug distribution modeling.
Okay, no blood vessels. What else?
Second, they often lack crucial immune cells, stromal cells, and innervation.
Nerves.
So if they don't have immune cells, then modeling things like inflammation or immunotherapy for cancer, that becomes really challenging.
Absolutely. You lose the context of the body's own defense mechanisms. But fortunately, solutions are rapidly emerging, often combining biology with bioengineering. We're seeing assembloids,
which are
aggregates of multiple organoids or multiple cell types put together to enhance complexity. So you can mix a tiny piece of gut with the immune cells it needs to function properly.
And then there's the really high-tech solution, the organoid on a chip.
That's where microfluidic systems come in. These tiny engineered chips provide the plumbing. They can supply mechanical forces, create fluid flow, and they're designed to incorporate those missing cells' endothelium, immune cells, to mimic blood circulation. That sounds like where the field is really heading. But for this to go mainstream, you need scale. You need to be able to do high-throughput screening.
And scalability is improving fast. We're seeing huge advancements in automation, robotics and liquid handling systems that streamline the whole process. Bioengineered devices like microwells are also improving the homogeneity and consistency, which is vital for regulatory approval.
So let's revisit that regulatory aspect. Technical challenges are one thing, but getting massive global agencies to pivot away from decades of established animal testing, that's another beast entirely.
Regulatory acceptance is the ultimate hurdle. It requires deep validation against clinical data, what they call the context of use. But the sheer volume of successful data, like that CF swelling assay, combined with all the failures of the traditional models, it creates massive pressure for change.
And the regulatory bodies are responding. The FDA Modernization Act isn't just lip service.
No, it provides a definitive legal pathway for these new approach methodologies to be accepted. In fact, the FDA is actively planning to phase out animal testing for entire classes of drugs, like monoclonal antibodies, specifically using these kinds of validated human alternatives. That move alone shows the huge confidence they're beginning to place in these models.
So to summarize our deep dive today, organoids really represent a monumental and frankly necessary shift in preclinical research. They enable personalized medicine breakthroughs, they provide superior toxicity prediction over old models, and they're replacing animal models where interspecies differences just made translation impossible, like with Parkinson's and norovirus.
They're bridging that critical gap between basic science and real clinical outcomes. The future is all about enhancing their predictive power through innovation in tissue integration, bringing in that vascularization, the immune system, and standardization, making sure these models are reproducible and reliable anywhere in the world.
And that leads us to our final provocative thought for you, the listener. Since organoids can faithfully model patient-specific responses, and have already proven that the effectiveness of drugs like hydroxychloroquine was incorrectly predicted by 2D cell lines, consider this. How quickly will regulatory bodies shift testing reliance entirely away from traditional animal models and towards these patient-derived microtissues when the concordant to human clinical outcome is demonstrably superior?